Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and another January means we are up for another Philip K. Dick Science Fiction and Film Festival in New York City, and I have with me today Daniel Abella, the program director of such a fine and fascinating film festival. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks, Summer. Thanks.
So last year's festival was a treat. We actually, later in the year, got to talk to your overall winner last year, Nightmare Code, and that was an entirely fascinating film. So thanks for putting that on my radar.
Oh, absolutely. Mark has really been an amazing director, producer. He really is a pleasure to work with him on this. He really knows how to not only deliver, create a great movie, but also connect people to that movie. So he's really succeed on all counts on my book.
So for 2016, what has been the biggest challenge for you in putting together a bigger and better festival?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is that we no longer at Tribeca, unfortunately. They closed.
Oh, no.
They sold the building to a developer. So now we had to find another venue, and we found one is the Village Cinema East, which will be running films basically back-to-back, two theaters simultaneously for 4 days, starting on Thursday all the way through Sunday. And it's been clearly a different Cinema Village East is a little bit more corporate in nature, so we really had to work around that and making sure that people still feel welcome. And we've created a few of venues outside the cinema that will basically hangout spots for filmmakers and the audience to be there. So one of them is going to be the Lovecraft Bar, which is only is about a 10-minute walk from Cinema Village. Great place, to great atmosphere. And so we're working together and making sure this is another exciting and pleasurable year for the filmmakers and the audience.
Now, did you have more entries overall this year? Because it looks like your short showcase is a lot larger than it was last year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we got a huge number of entries this year. And many of them are truly amazing cinematography, great stories. It was hard to choose. It got to that point. We really had to, unfortunately, turn down quite a good number of films. So we had to, I think that every year more and more people are finding out about our festival and but what we, in our mission, who we represent. So I think that's a word spreading around. We just really couldn't ask for it better.
Which tracks or which films are you looking forward to people seeing this year?
Well, on the shorts, we got some really amazing selections. We have, for instance, we have a world premiere, or at least a U.S. premiere, of Clones that are starring Rutger Hauer. We also have another great film. It's called The Art of Human Salvage, sort of a futuristic sci-fi starring Edward James Olmos. We have another great addition to our it is an animation called The Looking Planet, an amazing film. The cinematography is absolutely breathtaking. We also have some very good shorts. One of them is called Awakenings by an Indian director. So I think I'm really looking forward to, and another one is called Genghis Khan Conquers the Moon. That's really quite a treat for those who haven't seen it.
That title alone is intriguing.
Absolutely. At first I thought this would be, when it comes to period pieces, we have to be very careful. Seen a lot of them, but I've come across as very cheesy and well, but this was a real pleasant surprise. It's kind of for those who seeing this film, The Ninth Configuration, I think it shares a lot with that film, Will and Peter Blatty. It does take place in 13th century Mongolia.
Hmm.
And Genghis Khan has conquered the known world. He's looking for more lands to conquer, and now he looks to the moon as the next place. But after meeting a wizard, unusual things happen, making him to reconsider his place in the world. It's an amazing. One thing about all this year, more than other years, is that we actually have four actors that appear in the original Blade Runner.
Wow.
So I'm going to leave up to the audience and the participants to find who they are. There are four of them. And we also have an actor in Genghis Khan who appears in The Man in the High Castle. So I think that there's a reason why we get the film. And I think people who are, sending their films have Philip K. Dick in mind, not only in spirit and in terms of actual representation, in terms of the kind of people that have been appear in the films. So it was very. All of these are U.S. World premieres.
Awesome. Now, did you have more international submissions this year than last year?
Yeah, I definitely had more. We usually had a nice selection from the U.S. and Canada, but this year we had films from virtually every corner of the globe. We had from India, from Lebanon, from Russia, from China, from Korea, from Japan, from Norway, from Argentina. So just every corner is covered here. From Thailand. Very happy about that. They all share the same kind of theme. So fortunately, our selection process is not prescribed by a specific number of films in each country. It kind of emerged naturally. We end up finding that certain films fit in certain groups. And I think what we have this year is a nice cross-section of international sci-fi.
Cool. Now, are you seeing that some of the international films are still embodying the themes of Philip K. Dick, or having a slightly different twist on them to make them a little bit more unique? What are you seeing?
We have different categories in our festival. So we have a category of best Philip K. Dick adaptation or inspired short. And in those instances, we have films that are specifically were made with Philip K. Dick in mind. Then we have just sci-fi shorts. Don't really have much to do with Philip K. Dick. For instance, we have a film called Helio, H-E-L-I-O, and that's closer to the Wachowskis, may say, Jupiter Ascending, than to Philip K. Dick. We have experimental films. We have actually a tribute to Alan Watts, a series of mandalas that have been created. It's called Kensho. It's very trippy, experimental sci-fi. We have one called Will I Scatter Away. It was influenced by Maya Deren, her Meshes in the Afternoon, her experimental short years ago. So not everyone is submitting Philip K. Dick type films, and I certainly wouldn't want that. I mean, I want diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So the main theme that I am looking at, however, is the basic mission is, well, who are we? What is reality? What is the nature of what it means to be human? Now, these are the themes that run across different films, regardless whether being inspired directly by Philip K. Dick or just the general sci-fi. More sort of an introspective sci-fi, I would say, in some instances.
Okay.
Maybe with a little bit of paranoia thrown in.
Just a little bit, right? Just a hint.
Just a little bit.
Just
yeah,
a hint.
Yeah.
So
a little flavor. Yeah.
Are you having any special lecture sessions or anything to introduce Philip K. Dick themes?
Yeah, absolutely. We're very excited about that. We have one panel at Lovecraft called "It's a Man in the High Castle." It's called Philip K. Dick: Science Fiction and the Politics of Identity, where we look at what's going on in The Man in the High Castle, and how at some textual undercurrent is connected to a lot of what's going on today, the fascination with technology, the fascination with extremism in all shapes and manifestations. They're all part of the emerging archetype that seems to have a stronger and stronger impact on the culture. Sort of I would say, part of the archetype is surrendering to something.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than remaining an autonomous human being, sovereign human being, just surrendering to technology or surrendering to an ideology or surrendering to a fanatical belief system, whether it be religious or not. So, and that's something that Philip K. Dick always warned us against. Through his own personal experiences, he as you might know, he March 2374, he was stricken by a series of mystical, revelations. Now, he didn't know what to make of it. Someone else might have just immediately assumed it was the direct word of God and might have created a religion out of that, called it Valis. But to his credit, Philip K. Dick never succumbed to that. He continued asking, what is the source of this transmission? Is this just too many amphetamines, psychotic break, a mystical revelation? So that spirit of questioning, of inquiry, and remaining grounded in that place is why it's so admirable about him. It would have been very easy for him to just write a series of books, like L. Ron Hubbard did, and create a whole new religion. I'm sure a lot of people would have probably jumped in on that, but instead he said, okay, there's something obviously happened. It's an experience. And how we interpret that experience, it's really entirely a very personal matter. So that makes, in my book, that sets Philip apart from other writers who have great writers in their own right, but don't have that element. I mean, I'm always drawn to people who have personally have gone through a major kind of a personal initiation, through their own making. So I think this is something that we really need to heed to today. It's not about science fiction. It's about the Philip K. Dick, Robert Anton Wilson, other writers. How do you remain dignified in a world that is intent on devaluating or depreciating one's value, who reduces everything to a dollar sign, commoditizes the human being? Or in a world that it tries to impose a radical ideology and there's nothing you can do about it, like what happens to the characters in The Man in the High Castle. So I think that Philip is very relevant today. Because I think that his characters are just everyday people like you and I. They're not superheroes. They're not Tom Cruise jumping from one building to another or on top. No, they're average, dealing with these very frustrating, difficult issues which really represent the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
So Philip is a writer, but he also is a philosopher. But the way he puts his writing, he structures it in a way that it's easy to understand and enjoyable.
Yeah. The popularity of Man in the High Castle on Amazon, the series, is a testament to that, too.
Oh, absolutely. I keep running to all these people who have said, oh, I love it. I can't wait for the season two and so on. Now,
mm-hmm.
That really was a breakaway velocity with that show. And, what I find it interesting is this, that this show, there was a show back in the 90s called Fatherland, starring Rutger Hauer. So I think it was a miniseries, for TV miniseries. Didn't do that well. I remember watching it where we live in. Something about The Man in the High Castle, when it's happening right now versus 20 years ago, it's very indicative of something else going on, a trend. We began to realize, hey, look, maybe alternative realities may not be the case, but there's still a desire to look at these extremist movements and why we have to guard against them, because this is what might happen to us.
Mm.
So I do think there is a reason, not just Amazon's great marketing strategy. there's something else going on. I think there's an archetypal kind of a chord that is being that is resonating.
Yeah.
That's why people are into it. The Nazis have been around forever, in terms of movies and stories, but why is it that people at this point in time like that. Well, the production quality is amazing for the starters and the characters and so on. So I think that Philip is definitely very... So we have a Man in the High Castle panel. That's going back to digress here. But we also have a panel on... we have a documentary called it's called Sympathy for the Devil, the true story of the Church of the Final Judgment. For those who were in of age in the 60s and 70s, this was a cult that was implicated in all sorts of things going on in the culture, from Manson to the RFK assassination. At the end, it was just all hype. There was never anything that even remotely connected. Their ideology was a little odd. They were a spinoff of Scientology. And essentially, they all looked at, they had this trinity of gods, Jehovah, Satan, and Lucifer, and they'll consider all three of them equal and part of, so I find it absolutely, it's sort of a look back at the 60s and that period of misguided idealism for a lot of people. So we actually have the director coming in and might have one of the ex-processors on a panel. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh, interesting. Now,
this is the kind of thing that Philip would have loved hanging out with. He would have loved talking to those kind of people. And I think he would have really enjoyed it. And lastly, we have the Travis Walton story. Now, there was a movie made back in the, I think it's the late 80s. It's called Fire in the Sky.
Right.
And so it's based upon Travis Walton, who claims that back in 1975, he was traveling with a group of his friends. He saw this light in the background. He walked up to the light, and his friends witnessed his body being pulled on a tractor beam. So this has become the most famous case in UFO history, abduction history.
Mm-hmm.
So my attitude with this is like, look, something is going on. Some people might call it a UFO visitation. Others might say it was a sort of something, kind of a group hallucination. But certainly a lot of people are having this, not just three or four people. So what better place to showcase this than at our festival? You know, this is where anything strange and off the beaten track, it gets center attention. I think that's we're interested in that. I think the center's already strong enough. It doesn't need any more support. So we look at fringe phenomena, fortune phenomena, and find a groundwork where we can connect it to our own personal experiences. And Phil K. Big, I think he would have loved that. He really did talk about that kind of experience. He might not talk too much about UFOs, but I think he would have felt in his element. And that's what I want to, more than just movies, we want to have a whole forum where people can meet and exchange ideas.
Well, it's definitely a series of alternative experiences, whether it's the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, or today.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it, I think, a little bit different and attractive to many people. We also have a game called Californium. This game was produced and designed by a company in France, and the designer is coming in. He'll be making it, showing how the game is run. It's based loosely on Philip's own experiences, so inspired by this experience. The character basically is a writer of science fiction. And then he finds that there's certain little things in that world that are not real. So as soon as he identifies those things, he taps into that, and that connects him to another reality. And there are these messengers and these gatekeepers that tell him, well, this is not real, that's real, follow this, follow that. Messengers from the other world. So it is a video game, and it's kind of a set up as an architecture, progressively more complicated levels of reality. You know, this is, inspired by Philip K. Dick, so, I'm very excited. This is with the U.S. unveiling of the game.
Well, cool. I would definitely love to hear more about the game. The festival itself runs January 14th through 17th in New York City, the Village Cinema East, you said?
Two of them, Cinema Village 2 and 3. We have an opening party. that on Wednesday, January 13th, at Lovecraft, which, by the way, for those who think about the writer, well, it was inspired by the writer. So the whole bar club, has been decorated along those lines. So you see very gothic figures and paintings, and it's got a very cool atmosphere. So we are looking to start there and run it through the end. Now, Joanna Cassidy, who was Zora, she was the replicant who was killed early in the Blade Runner.
Right.
She actually had the video she put together of her snake dance. So we're coordinating with her to see if she can do a Skype with us, either the opening of the party or closing ceremonies.
That'd be awesome. It'd be a big treat for PKD fans.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think this is all very exciting. It's building, and, you know, it's just more layers of complexity and getting the word out, and more people are going to the original books. In fact, we have one thing about this year's writers and judges. One of them is David Hartwell, and he actually was Philip K. Dick's final last editor, and he knew Phil personally. We actually asked him to be the judge on one of the categories. Then we have Paul Levinson and David Brin, and both of them are very famous sci-fi writers with a whole history of books. So we have that's what we did for a little bit this year. We really want to reach out to other authorities and find have their take on what the movies. So it's all, you know, we had a huge number of submissions.
For our listeners, if you're in the New York City area, please check out the PKD website, Philip K. Dick Film SciFiFilmFest.com, is it? I will have the link in the show notes. Go to the website, buy your tickets, enjoy a weekend of alternative reality and just entertaining science fiction. How about that?
Absolutely. I think there is no doubt. We'll have parties, we'll have panels, and we'll have great films. Or close to 100 shorts and features. So I think there'll be something for everyone.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time today, Daniel.
Thank you, Summer. And you're more than welcome to come and join us if you find time in your busy schedule this next weekend. Look forward to working and talking to you in the future as well.
Excellent. We will have a follow-up with reports of the winners of the Film Fest later on. But for now, check out the links. Go to the Film Festival if you're in New York City. And let us know how the Film Festival was if you do manage to go. Thank you, Daniel, for your time.
Thank you, Summer, and you have a good day.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
There's a little superhero in all of us. Listen to Krypton Radio every day, and we'll help you find yours.
Welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi movie review. I'm Noah Richman.
And I'm Darren Gulsvig.
Today we are talking about a film that's really not a genre film, but I think it has a lot of interest to genre audiences because it is an action survival wilderness movie, and that, of course, would be The Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, Donald Gleason. And certainly a film that there has been quite a bit of talk about because of how brutal the shoot was, that it didn't use a lot of effects for the outdoor sequences, that you really did have Leonardo DiCaprio freezing in cold water. And
yeah, it was pretty It was pretty raw, wasn't it?
Yeah. You definitely had a cast and crew that went through a lot of punishment. You had a lot of crew members that walked off and refused to participate in the movie. Anyway, when all is said and done, I guess the real question is the final product worth it? What do you think, Darren?
I really loved the first 60 minutes of the movie. Visually, it was amazing. I mean, obviously, that's what you're expecting from this type of movie. Natural lighting is just absolutely gorgeous, the way it was shot, the composition and everything. And I felt really, I was in awe the whole time. There were some sequences like when the bear, attacks.
Yeah.
That just left me kind of breathless. And I was just in awe how they did that. And as the movie, as the second part was continuing through, I got kind of like, okay, this isn't really going anywhere, because it became so redundant. And it was, this, in a sense, a basic revenge film. And not that there's anything wrong with that. It was just the execution. It was just unrealized ideas. You know?
Right, and almost it's at least 2.5 hour revenge mm-hmm. film instead of shortened to the point.
And it was not a whole lot of character development. And again, I'm not saying you need to have that for this type of movie, but I have to at least give some sense that I care about, you know, your main protagonist, if there even was one in this movie. But it just felt like there was lots of I don't know. I didn't really, like I said, I didn't really care. And if anything, it just felt like I was watching a movie, and how much more shit can we do to Leonardo DiCaprio? And I was actually thinking while watching it is, wow, he's pretty versatile as an actor. I mean, he could take a lot of stuff that I don't think I would have liked to have been a part of. But so I don't think that's the right type of thing you want your audience to be thinking while watching it. And again, I know it's, some people absolutely love it, and I can certainly see why they would. It just didn't feel right at the end for me. Maybe it was because it was just basic in its premises, you know?
All right. Yeah, for myself, I enjoyed it as a good comic book movie. I thought it really seemed like it was an action adventure straight out of a graphic novel. And I enjoyed it from that perspective. However, I wandered out very befuddled, because it is directed by a director that had made very public pronouncements about comic books being for 7-year-olds mm-hmm. and it being a disease of our society, that people have grown up and that they don't seem to be able to outgrow this. And so my assumption would be, okay, well, if this is where he's coming from, then obviously this film is going to be a film that really explores the depth of the human experience, and maybe being set in that time and space will really explore some of these cultures and have really nuanced characters and a storyline that keeps you thinking for a long time afterward. Instead, it's a straight-up comic book action movie. Mm-hmm. And so why this director feels he needs to be superior about it is,
well, you know, and again, that's, I didn't really know about that until afterwards, and it just rubbed me the wrong way. It's just a matter of opinion, of course, but yeah, it's in its basic raw, it was, I could easily see this in a graphic novel.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just, it wasn't a very deep, I mean, I think the movie The Gray did a better job of putting you in that position where you were really hoping and, you know, hoping for the best for the character by Liam Neeson. You know, when he was trying to survive, you understood that there was in his group issues, and trying to combat that is, and again, we were just watching Leonardo just go from one event where he gets extremely torn apart by a bear, which again I liked, but then you see him go through these events where he keeps on trying to survive little things that happen, and it just felt long, and just, okay, when are we going to finally see him, you know, place his revenge on,
right,
on this dude that did all this, and
right.
But yeah, I almost feel bad saying this, because it was such a beautiful film to look at, and again,
so would you say in the end that it's a film that you liked and you would recommend, or would you have to say that you just, it was just too long for you, to the point where you can't say that you would call it something you liked?
I would definitely give somebody a recommend them to see it, only because their point of view may be different than mine. And again, I know what the director's always trying to, there's these images, he's trying to convey this. The director's trying to make you feel uncomfortable watching the movie. I mean, that's what, obviously, it seems to me that he's trying to accomplish. And for the most part, he did achieve that for the first part of the movie. It just felt redundant and, to use a word that's used a lot, but templative. I mean, it felt like, okay, I've seen this before. And it didn't really feel any different than any other movie. If anything, it's just... I would recommend seeing it for if you want to see a great, greatly shot movie, an art, you know, a true crafts movie of how cinematography. But from a storytelling point of view, it's not that good.
So. Yeah. Again, for myself, I guess I'm going to repeat what I already said. I think it's good as a just straight up action adventure movie. And obviously, the punishing shoot does give you some scenes that leave you looking at it like, wow, how did they pull that off? But when all is said and done, it's definitely overrated from the point of view.
Bored. That's the best way I could say it in the end. I was just bored.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would say overrated from the point of view of quote-unquote film greatness, of a director that seems to think he's making something that's so much greater than all those juveniles reading their comic books. From that point of view, I would say it doesn't live up to what it proclaims.
Right.
Anyway, that's our thoughts about The Revenant, and thanks for listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Thank you so much.
Well, the Philip K. Dick Science Fiction Film Festival is one of those events I wish I could be in New York City to view personally. Maybe one of these years I'll get there. If any of our listeners are going, please feel free to call in and give us a summary, a report. Let us know what stars you saw. Number is 602-635-6976. And if you're at any other film festival and you want to give a report on the science fiction or H.P. Lovecraft or horror or fantasy, whatever genre film festival you might be attending and you want to give us a little background on it, maybe support your local film festival, go ahead and call that in too. You know, I'm a big fan of film festivals and especially indie movies because that seems where a lot of the, shall we say, out-of-the-box storytelling seems to be happening these days. We have a lot of indie movies coming up, both sci-fi and horror, so we'll get you in touch with those as they come along. Everything else right now is just getting back into the swing of things after the holiday break downtime. Everybody seems to enjoy, or a lot of people seem to work through, depending on what you got on your plate, I guess. Anyway, that'll do it for this episode. Again, if you have any film festivals or conventions or off-the-wall genre sci-fi fandom events you want to talk about, let us know so we can tell other people about them. So if you've got those reports to send in or any other questions or any other comments, feel free to call those in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can record a review on your own machine, on your own device, and email that to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Please leave a review over on iTunes. Let other people know that you're enjoying the show, so maybe they'll consider listening in, and hopefully they will tell a couple of friends, and those friends will tell a couple of friends, and we'll all keep having some fun. Check us out on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. Check us out on Google+. Look for Slice of Sci-Fi over there, too. always, the website is open for your perusal and commentary at sliceofscifi.com. We have a contest going on till next week, so check that out and follow the instructions. You might win yourself a Blu-ray. We also have writersafterdark.com for all your, well, not all your, some select sci-fi, fantasy, and horror book coverage. And of course, we have itscomicbookday.com. Thank you everyone for your donations and your continued patronage over at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Every penny that you're donating and pledging does support Slice of Sci-Fi and Writers After Dark and Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas. So thank you. Thank you all for your continued support. And if you can help out at all, as little as $1 a month, you can help keep us going here. So thank you, everyone who is supporting. Even if you make a one-time donation, thank you. Thank you so much. Another shout out to our good friends over at SciFried for the awesome theme music. Thank you, guys. If you want to check out more music by them, head on over to sci-friedband.com. Tell them Summer sent ya. And for those of you in the Orlando area, it's well worth it getting on their mailing list. Be notified of their local performances. And of course, last year they performed at Dragon Con. I think they're looking forward to going back again this year or in the future. So keep an eye out there. But that will do it for this show. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.